On Pilot TV this week, we're teaching Cartesian philosophy to an audience currently residing at His Majesty's pleasure in waiting for the out on BBC One, mixing old flames and dead bodies in His and Hers on Netflix and digging up some very, very, very long buried evidence in the 29th series of Silent Witness on BBC. We're nothing if not late to the party. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is, yes, going full retro this week. I'm filling in some of the gaps in our recent coverage. Now, clearly, this is all about us being very conscientious and wanting to do right by you, the audience, and not at all because there is absolutely fuck all on television this week. But look, you know.
Well, no, there is fuck all on television, but yeah. It's just that it's embargoed fuck all. That's
I mean, there's also literally.
I mean, it's
fuck
not
all.
A great week, but there is stuff. It is honestly, we could have easily done stuff, but it is embargoed.
Can we though?
Yes, I'll be explaining that in any minute now. I've just told you there are good shows.
Well, there's one show at the very end of the week.
Two.
One show
anyway,
at the very
end. Oh my
end
god,
of the
James's anti-ITV prejudice is absolutely furious.
I don't know what you're talking about, Boyd. That is slander.
What is it about
slander.
The ITV thing?
I've been to ITV. I was invited into their building. I went to their office and interviewed Sanjeev Bhaskar, and no one tried to kill me at all. Not even once.
They're just being nice. Yeah.
Do you think? Yeah. So do you think it was a warning?
Some of the greatest dramas in TV history have been on ITV. As you know, you yourself, Cracker.
True.
Love it.
True.
Prime Suspect.
Yep.
Hillsborough.
Yep.
This is just off the top of my head.
Unforgotten.
Unforgotten. Ongoingly brilliant. Unforgotten. So it's just insanely annoying that
you're right. They do genuinely have fantastic stuff. I'm just saying their hit to miss ratio is maybe not where it could be.
I don't know if that's true anymore.
Hold on a minute.
Anyway,
I don't want to get into it, but let's just say After the Flood was not a good choice that you liked the other day. Remember, that's an ITV drama.
That's different, but it was decent. I thought, yeah. But anyway, but there are certainly more very good ITV dramas coming up.
There are.
Yes,
anyway,
look,
we should deal with this.
ITV are absolutely fine. They are no Channel 5. Anyway, let's move on to saying hello to you both, TV's Boyd Hilton. Hello.
Hello.
And the editor of Crime Malicious magazine, Steph Seelan. How are we both?
Honesty. No, we're fine.
Good.
Lovely to see you.
I'm very pleased. Nice.
Absolutely. Getting ready for my glamorous trip to Los Angeles.
You're jolly, yes.
It's jolly.
How many days are you going?
Four.
For 4 days.
Yeah.
Are you staying in a swanky hotel?
I believe so, yeah.
In 4 days?
Yeah. Santa
but this
Monica.
Is a Slate presentation.
Yeah.
So why is it over 4 days?
Hold on a minute. Your jealousy is speaking volumes.
I was invited.
He was invited. We could have probably got you up. We could have done a whole junket there, yeah.
Why didn't you go? Is it because of the sun?
Yeah, that is true. Like, my vampiric tendencies mean that in the Santa Monica sun, I would be reduced to a pile of ash.
Why didn't you go?
Yeah, that's the reason.
No, but really, why are you not going?
I'd be like Marlon Brando in the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Okay, but one more time. You know, why are you not going?
It's a long way, Steph. You know, I've got things to do, podcasts to edit. Like, there's stuff that needs my attention. I didn't go. But it does sound like a great trip.
I'm excited.
I'm excited.
Yeah. I should be reporting back.
Yeah.
On this very podcast.
And crucially, and this is the one thing I think we're going to commit to this on this podcast, if there is a goodie bag and it is good, you will, of course, swipe me one.
Your priorities are so you.
Yeah.
If I
snacks,
can explain.
Number one.
Snacks, you just, listeners, on the way to the studio.
Yes, please
let
tell
me,
them what happened.
Let me reveal that there was clearly a big meeting and they ordered in loads of like pots of yogurt and stuff from, you know, wherever.
And granola.
Yogurt granola pots, you know.
With a compote.
And there were like three, and I took one, and James took two.
Yes.
He took two compote things.
I did.
That was the first.
In fairness, they were different flavours.
Oh, yeah, no, they were different flavours, yeah. Some might accuse you of being, you know.
Greedy.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the first thing. And then now, what was the second thing?
Goodie bags.
Mm. Oh, yeah. When we were discussing earlier this morning, myself, as they would say if you're on the Traitors, and others, we're talking about, you know, what's going to happen with this junket, this presentation by Apple of their new season, et cetera, et cetera. And all James was obsessed with is, will there be a goodie bag?
Yeah.
And he thinks that it will be a good... You're expecting it to be like iPhones and stuff.
A swag.
I don't think there will be. I'm on the other... I don't think there...
Hey,
because
I don't need an iPhone. A Foundation-branded thermos flask would do me. Like, that's all I really
maybe
need.
Maybe that kind of thing. But there's going to be hundreds of international press going there and stuff, yeah, and important people. I don't think they'll have a goodie bag for all. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
If there is a Foundation-themed thermos and you do not swipe it for me,
hey,
we are no longer friends.
My promise to you now is if there's any Foundation goodies of any kind,
yeah,
I will bring them home.
Okay, good.
If there are any shrinking goodies of any kind, can we give them to my beloved Gabby, also known as Kay Ribeiro?
Gabby. Oh, Gabby's the character in the show. Yeah.
I mean, look, what you've done here, you have segued, thankfully, because obviously, as per last week, we said, we should get right into the podcast, you know, be on message so that new listeners do not get alienated by our twaddle. Didn't go so well. But you've segued brilliant into what Steph's been watching, because I know what Steph's been watching.
Yes.
And it is shrinking, specifically 22 or three now episodes are shrinking.
22 episodes of season one and season two and the hour-long season three premiere. So 23 episodes. And I not only watched it, I watched it all within 48 hours over the weekend.
That is psychopathic.
I know.
Which is extraordinary when you tell us that you've only got a very small window to watch this stuff, which is like Friday afternoon between the hours of 2 and 6 or something like that. But you betrayed that. But you managed to watch entire 21 hours of TV or whatever.
I had it on my phone and I was like, had my headphones in my house. I was walking around, and listeners of the Pilot Plus podcast will know that my small child said to me, "Mummy, do you know that screen time is really bad for your brain?" And I was like, batted her away. I was like, "No, don't
she
interrupt
didn't,
me."
She didn't use the phrase screen time.
She does.
Oh my God,
she
precocious. Did. How old is she?
She's 6.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Really?
I think you'll find, Mummy, that screen time is a pernicious development of modern society that should be prevented right now.
I mean, you've met her. She is like, she went, "The brain, like that, not good for the brain."
Tapping
like
her head.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Wow.
I know. She's the boss of me.
Was it good for your brain?
It was really good for my brain, so I don't know what she was talking about. She knows nothing.
Yeah, she's 6. What does she know?
Well, she's a bit like you, because all she really cares about is the goodie bags at parties.
Yeah, snacks and goodie bags.
Yeah.
Snacks and goodie bags. Yeah. It's the meaning of life.
You and a 6-year-old girl. Just,
yeah.
You know. Anyway, yeah, that's what I've been watching, and it's been thoroughly amazing. And Kay and I have been texting about it, because she is my Gabby.
Oh, you're shrinking buddies.
Oh, God. Well, we obviously, she's one of my best friends, as I know I've said before, and we have deeply bonded over this. I feel like this is a show Kay could have written, because it's so funny and so good and so smart, and it gives all of the emotions that you want, and you don't know what to expect, and it's just joyful. It's a really comfortable and wonderful place to live in.
You and Kay are like this show's biggest proponents.
You are, yeah.
We absolutely are.
Which is handy, because, spoiler alert for the news story later, but there is a fourth season.
There is a fourth season.
We might as well deal with that now.
Yeah, so it's been renewed.
Yeah.
Of course it has.
There will be more shrinking.
Yeah, and it's only just premiered the third season. That's because it's so unbelievably brilliant.
I think it is one of the biggest returning shows.
I will tell you now, the chatter in the office upstairs was about people getting their 3-month Apple subscription because Shrinking was out. That's what people on the ground are saying. They're like, "Oh, Shrinking's coming out. I'm going to get my 3-month Apple subscription now."
People upstairs or people on the ground?
People on the ground.
Okay.
People on the ground, but upstairs in the office. That's what they're all talking about.
I see my close personal friend Tim Cook will be very pleased to hear that.
Yes, I know. Yeah. Yes,
Tim
he will.
Cook, who attended.
I know. I know. I say close personal friend, we're estranged. Like, we're not close.
I mean, I can't talk because I'm
going to. We've drifted apart.
I can't talk because I'm going to an entire junket.
Right.
Which Apple is.
You're basically going to Tim Cook's house.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
Are you going to a hotel with a pool?
Well, I don't know if it's got a pool, but it's certainly literally right on the beach as far as I can tell anyway.
What?
Yeah. And I think it probably has got a pool as well.
Okay,
yeah,
are you going to go in the pool?
I probably would.
This is too much information.
No, sorry, I'm just... Do you know what one of my biggest things I hate about people is when they go to hotels with pools and then they never go in the pool?
If there's a pool, I will use it, yeah. 100%. The other thing is, you know what I've done is I have... sorry, wittering on about this.
No, keep going.
I've checked out the menus.
Oh, my God.
You have to do that.
The breakfast. Because breakfast. America is all about breakfast.
Of course it is.
The breakfast menu is fantastic.
Is it?
I'm telling you now.
Give me an example.
Oh, like French toast with, you know, compote.
Oh, I love it when they do those little potatoes.
Home fries.
Exactly. How am I getting drawn into this conversation? Like, next week on Jolly Watch, we'll be discussing.
Oh, this is from the man who gets to go to Florida for like 10 days every year.
It's not 10 days.
Ride on some
it's
stupid
like
roller coaster.
5 or 6.
Yeah.
What?
Exactly. Don't you know? He does this junket to Florida every year. He can't complain about any junket ever because he has this incredible trip.
Do you know what? When I first started my career and worked at Empire with all you losers, right?
Yes.
I remember Chris Hewitt, my beloved Chris Hewitt, coming up to me because I was like the office manager, and he was like, and he, you know, I loved him. So he was like, I just need to let you know about this thing called Comic-Con, which I absolutely have to go to, and it's essential. And can you talk to our boss so he can let me go? And I was like, is it really important? And he was like, yeah. And I mean, I'm a really big fan of, you know, and I was like, okay. So I spoke to Colin and I was like, Chris really needs to go to Comic-Con. He's going to get this, this and this. He has to go. So he went to Comic-Con. And then when he came back from Comic-Con, he gave me a plastic bag full of all of his receipts. And he's like, can you now do all my expenses? And that is how I became Chris Hewitt's bitch.
That was your reward.
Yeah.
Is that still maintained to this day?
Yeah, because I was just like, people would come up to me, can you talk to Colin? Because I really need to go to Cannes.
You're just scared to talk to Colin?
Yeah, because he was the editor. And they were like, can you talk to Colin? You've got away with him. Can you ask him if I can go to Cannes? Can I go? And like Damon Wise, amazing like film journalist, would be like, Steph, you know, yeah. Group like, Steph, I need to go to Cannes. Can you just book this apartment? Don't tell Colin yet. That's what I just do. I'm just like, yeah.
I mean,
I know, junket donkey. That's what I was.
Junket, yeah. Donkey. Okay, yeah, fair enough.
So, what's this when you go on?
I feel we've got slightly off track. I'm going to wrestle this podcast back to Chex Notes television.
Yes,
and the things we've been watching. Right? Did you watch anything other than Shrinking?
Yeah.
No.
Oh,
no. Of course you did.
Yes, I did. Okay, so I also watched, as a real palate cleanser, I watched Pete Wicks For Dog's Sake. It's so lovely.
Okay. You killed Boyd.
Sorry. Boyd. Of all the shows to bring up to James, that is, you may have taken the biscuit. Because
a dog biscuit.
A dog biscuit. Yeah, no, carry on.
No, because I feel that you can open yourself up to new genres.
I mean, famously. Yeah.
And you like dogs.
This segment of the podcast is a safe space. You can talk about it. So carry on. Yeah. But I'm just saying, it's funny how...
Yeah. It's so delightful. It's okay. It's the epitome of a palate cleanser. He is... It's just sitting around with loads of rescued dogs and trying to find them homes, and it's just
and who is
lovely.
He?
God, okay. Right. James meets
exactly.
World.
Exactly, this is what I'm talking about.
Right.
Pete Wicks.
Yeah, I know who Joe Wicks is. Is this his brother?
No.
Is
no.
Pete Wicks Joe Wicks' brother? Help me.
I mean, you could have been. It's a legitimate question.
No, it isn't. It's not a legitimate question at all. Okay. Just what, because they both have hair and they're alive? That is not a legitimate question.
They also share a last
name.
Yeah, but there's like... Okay.
And they're both on reality TV.
All right, yeah, do you know what you're actually right?
Who is he? Who's Pete Wicks?
Okay, so Pete Wicks is a broadcaster.
Right.
And you won't know this, but he also works for our company.
Oh, does he?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's good
point.
To know.
Good point.
So I probably met him. Okay, nice.
He's literally upstairs.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's a podcaster, and he was from TOWIE. Remember TOWIE? The show.
You would be shocked to hear, never watched that.
Okay. Well, he loves dogs, and so he works with the Dogs Trust, and he does this show For Dog's Sake, and he goes around and talks about all these dogs that need to be rescued. And in the episode that I watched, he went to a lady's house and she had fostered like 160 dogs over 10 years. So she's obviously the nicest person in the world.
I do like dogs.
You do like dogs. Mm. And you said that the other day when you were looking at Nancy, my dog.
Your dog is excellent.
She is, but she should be called.
Steph has a schnauzer called Nancy that looks like Brett Goldstein. True story.
Does look like, it does look like. You know my dog, Nancy. Yeah. Although I did, as I told you, want to have a schnauzer that I called Doogie Schnauzer, but she was a boy and I just feel like I couldn't call her Doogie Schnauzer.
That's fair.
Yeah. How does it look like Brett
You have to
Goldstein.
Look her in the eye and you'll
really
see it.
It looks like Brett Goldstein.
Wow.
Like, it's got the emotional depth of Brett Goldstein.
It's not just your obsession with Shrinking that is...
No, the eyebrows are strong.
Yeah.
Eyebrow game strong and lower jaw strong.
Well, the interesting thing is you've picked that show. Have you finished?
Please go on.
I finished. Please go on.
Pete Wicks and Dogs, or whatever it's called. Pete Wicks, was it? For the Love of Dogs is another show about
For Dog's Sake.
For Dog's Sake. That's it. One of the things I've watched is Catman.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Yes. With David Baddiel.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, but the Pete Wicks dog thing is fine. But listen to the cast of Talking Heads on this show talking about their love of cats. Ricky Gervais. Josh Widdicombe, Frank Skinner, and Jonathan Ross. As I said, Jonathan Ross already? Jonathan Ross, etc. And Frank Skinner doesn't even like cats, and he's on it just talking about why he prefers dogs to cats. But it is a three-part series. It was launched on Channel 4 last week, but it went out at the same time as Traitors, so
no one watched it.
But I've caught up with it on the Channel 4 online portal, whatever it's called, channel4.co.uk.
4OD.
And it's really good. And I don't really like cats. I am absolutely a dog over
cat
person.
You are definitely a dog person.
I love a dog, but I'm slightly allergic to cats. Certain cats really that friends of mine have got, I can barely go in their houses because of my issues. But... David Baddiel puts over such a strong case for the love of cats, that it's really funny and entertaining series.
What
and he meets kind of high profile cats like the cat outside Downing Street. You know that cat?
Schuppert, like Karl Lagerfeld's cat.
Yeah, for example, probably tells the story of that. So it's just the whole phenomenon of cats and human being relationship with cats is analysed in the series. It's very good.
I would just say that you must always remember that cats do not love you.
Yeah, that's the difference, isn't it? Dogs do love you, 100%.
Oh my God, my dog thinks I'm
cats,
the best
cats
in the world.
Tolerate you.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
Like
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, that's what cats are like fucking cheating pets. They have like six different homes. That's what they're like.
The promiscuity of cats is your issue.
Yeah. That's exactly what is my issue. You're definitely not a cat person.
No, I'm not. I have had a cat in the past, several cats, in fact, yes. As a child, I had all manner. I've had cats, dogs, gerbils, hamsters, goldfish, budgerigars. If something is small, feathered or fluffy and breathes, at one point or another, I had it as a child.
What happened to all of them?
We don't ask that question.
Oh my God, are you an animal?
I've got a very hilly back garden, I'm just saying.
Oh my God.
What's your favourite pet?
Favourite pet? Dogs. Dogs were my favourites. Yeah. I settled on dogs ultimately.
What kind of dog did you have?
I have had a Cairn Terrier, and I have had a giant mutant Golden Retriever who was more like a bear, and
what
West Highland
called?
Terriers. Canis Dogis, I think is the Latin for it. No, I don't know. The first one, so my Cairn Terrier was named Benji after the dog from Benji, Zax and the Alien Prince.
Of course.
Because he looked like that. And I had a Golden Retriever who was named Sandy after the dog from Annie.
Yeah.
And then the West Highland Terrier was called Katie, but my mum named that. I had nothing to do with it.
West Highland Terrier's cute.
I nearly got a West Highland Terrier, and I should have, because Nancy is a massive barker, and West Highland Terriers, I don't think, bark.
Is Nancy a massive barker?
Schnauzers are notoriously big barkers.
It's possible we have digressed
away from the core theme
of this podcast, which, and let me reiterate again, checks notes, television.
Except, so Catman is on television, so Catman, please catch up with it. It's very entertaining. Whatever your view on cats is, it's really funny. Then I've finished Industry, the current season, and oh my God, what an absolutely phenomenal series four it has been. And I think I mentioned it when our review reviewed it, didn't we? Did we?
We did review it, yes.
I think at that point I got up to four, because they put the first four out to reviewers, and now they gave me the rest of the four. I think we're probably halfway through in real time on BBC One on Monday nights. It goes out, it's not all available on iPlayer all in one go, because it's an HBO show, so it's weekly. You have to watch it weekly. But oh my God, I've watched the whole thing. And let me just say, Kit Harington deserves all the kudos for throwing himself into this role, is all I would say. There's a scene in an upcoming episode of intimacy that is both hilarious and shocking, and he goes for it, and it's absolutely phenomenal. Also, without spoiling anything, I know that is my catchphrase, and I often end up, when I say that, being accused of spoiling something.
Yeah.
I was reading up on, someone else mentioned this in one of the American reviews. It's kind of like a stealth account, this series of Industry, of the kind of the Ghislaine Maxwell, Jeffrey Epstein story. It's really clever how you suddenly come, you're like, oh, that's what they're getting at. And by the end of the series, it's a really powerful, the way it powerfully implicates people, certain characters, so I won't say who they are, in that kind of activity is brilliantly written and brilliantly conceived.
I haven't seen the show. I can't tell if Boydie has just ruined Industry, but do write in and let us know if you feel he has.
I don't think I have.
I did. I couldn't get on with Industry. I was on an episode when I was just doing it sort of part-time, and I just, I don't know why I couldn't get into it. It just,
it fails the Bell End test.
Yeah,
that's fundamentally the problem, that everyone on it basically is a Bell End. But it's an incredibly well-written show and very well-observed. Also, it's a show that kind of has reinvented itself repeatedly with every season, which is a very difficult thing to do.
I remember now, it's because I hated everyone in it. You're right,
yes.
That's what it was. I think
that's often where I bump up against that and, for example, Succession, because everyone in it is loathsome.
Yeah, but we've been through this. It doesn't matter.
No, look, people still listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that doesn't matter.
Mm. Yeah, but maybe I should give it another go.
You've got to, because it's fantastic, yeah.
Okay.
So finished that. The Night Manager, I interviewed the director and writer of The Night Manager for a spoiler special that we'll put out eventually, sometime.
When we need to record our bit.
We need to,
work out how to fit it around your jolly.
Yeah, true. Mm. All I'd say is, so I finished that. So that again, I think probably when this goes out, the finale might have aired, I think, on BBC One, Sunday night, 9 o'clock. Anyway, what I want to say about it is, we'll go into it in detail when we do our spoiler special. I think this series, I remember when we reviewed it, it wasn't quite as spectacular as the beginning of the first series, which was 9-10 years ago now. But what this series does absolutely in a phenomenal way, it is a bit of a slow burn deliberately. So it gets all of the pieces together. It's quite a complicated setup, the second series. More complicated, I would say, than season one in terms of the different groups and different kind of people who are all kind of involved in the big plot, which is about kind of regime change, you know, in Colombia, but there's people in London, there's people based in London who are working on this, there's people in Colombia working on it, there's people in Spain working on it. It's a whole, like, it's almost like a global, you know, story that takes in global espionage in an anti-James Bond, in a non-James Bond kind of way. It's kind of like what would it really be like if there's a kind of global plot which involves regime change in a particular country. Anyway, it builds to the point where the finale is so brilliant that it's like, even though certain episodes on the way there might have been a bit slow or a bit, you know, deliberately paced, it all comes together in such a brilliant way. So it's almost like you have to do what they do in the earlier parts. So one of the criticisms I've read people had was that the main bad guy in it, who's this young kind of figure, kind of who clearly has almost like a sexual feeling about the main character, played by
Tom Hiddleston.
Thank you, Tom Hiddleston's character. There's like a frisson, a flirtation between the two of them as soon as they meet. Almost, you can't miss it. It's there, and people are saying, oh, his character is not as powerful as the enemy in series one, right? As the bad guys in series one. Well, that's very deliberate, and how that plays out is fascinating. But it all builds up to the point where all the characters come together in the finale, and there are so many brilliant scenes in the finale. It's one incredible confrontation, cross, double, triple cross, etc. It's just fantastic. And I think that is one of the best I think that episode is up there with the very best of the first series and will be one of the best episodes of the year.
I'm going to put a question to you.
Go
about
on.
Tom Hiddleston.
Yes. Arsenal fan?
Is he an Arsenal fan?
Yeah, is that the question?
Oh, all the best people.
Was that the question?
No, it wasn't. Oh, okay. Tom Hiddleston, do you think he's ever been considered for Bond? And do you think, crucially, he's actually too tall to play Bond? No, that's going to sound silly, but I think he is too tall. And that's why I think
he's never... Is there a height restriction on...
I do think he's too tall.
How tall is too tall?
Yeah.
Tom Hiddleston, too tall.
But is he that tall? First of all, I think his
screen presence is too tall for to be Bond.
No.
He's basically 6'2".
That's too tall.
Is it?
No. How tall is Daniel Craig? Isn't it? You're saying Daniel Craig isn't?
No, Daniel Craig's not too tall.
Actually, he's probably shorter, but I think Roger Moore is pretty tall. From
5'10", Daniel Craig.
Roger Moore?
There you go, point.
Heights of James Bond's.
I think it's a thing.
No, I think there's all kinds of reasons why he wouldn't be.
Roger Moore, 6'1¼".
Oh, there you go. I knew
he's Roger
fairly
Moore.
Tall. 6'1¼", it's very specific.
Nice.
He won't be James Bond, 100%, but not for that reason.
Sean Connery was 6'2".
Oh, there you go. Mm. So, I mean, your theory.
So, Steph, your theory is...
I feel like they were shot differently, so maybe that's why.
They were shot differently?
You know, like, back in there when they were James Bond, it was shot differently. I think nowadays he's too tall to be Bond.
Oh, yes, they did put the famous short filter on when they shot Sir Sean.
I'm just saying, I think there's something to it.
Is it because, from your stature, Steph, everyone looks like Ents from Lord of the Rings?
I mean, I am 5 foot, so yes, that's true.
Yes.
Okay. All right, why would he 100% not be considered as Bond also? That's scathing.
Oh, he may have been considered. I'm talking about right now as we approach the announcement. I mean,
he's too famous.
He's kind of too famous, exactly. He's too old because they're going for a younger Bond. Everyone, that seems to be clear. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, kind of almost YA Bond. I'm partly making that up. I don't think he'll be that young. But it's going to be a less well-known. Although at the moment, the Callum Turner seems to be the strong favourite, who isn't that obscure, is he? He's pretty famous, especially because he goes out with... famous pop star, Dua Lipa, is it?
Or Dua Lipa.
Dua Lipa, yeah. So he's the favourite. He's the strong favourite. We're thinking of that direction rather than
I don't want him.
Well-established Arsenal fan.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, I digress.
And finally...
Sorry, oh no, you're still
one
going.
More, I've got one more thing I wanted to mention, which is... I'll talk later about the shows that we couldn't review that are actually in this week of TV that we're looking at because of embargoes.
What was that noise?
Yeah, what was that noise? He thinks that I forgot to put things on the list, but they are embargoed. There's Betrayal is on ITV, and that's definitely embargoed, and so is, unfortunately, Lord of the Flies,
yeah.
Which is the... BBC One adaptation by Jack Thorne, no less,
yes.
Of Adolescence.
Of the William Golding book.
Every other thing fame. Of the William Golding book, which is one of the... I think almost everyone I know read it at school. I think in secondary school. It's such a part of the syllabus, isn't it? Did you do it? Did you do it?
Yeah, of course I did. Yeah. But also then it makes you hate it a bit.
Why?
Don't you think? I don't know. It just does when you're forced to do something.
Pretty much every adaptation of it. Well, every adaptation that was around at the time.
This is the first TV adaptation.
Yeah.
Amazing. So there was a film.
A
couple of films. But this is the very first TV adaptation, which is quite surprising. I'm surprised by that. I didn't realise that. And Jack Thorne, what he's done is, we will review it hopefully on Plus or whatever, so I'm not going to give my opinion on it. But the device he's deployed, which is very interesting, is it's a four-parter, and each part is told from the point of view of a different kid, a different character.
Nice.
Which does, so that is a really interesting kind of twist on the narrative, if you like. It's also directed by Mark Mundon, who did Utopia, and he's a very visual, kind of has a visual stylist, if I can put it that way. But the funny thing was, we'll review it properly, it was at screening. There was a screening at the BFI that I went to on Monday night, and they had Mark Mundon, the director, and Jack Thorne on the panel, and the producer. But the cast is essentially 25 kids, ranging from like 5, 6, 7 year olds through to 14, 15 year olds, right? And they were all there at this BFI screening, and it was pandemonium. It was so funny. It was literally like, if you go to the BFI, have you been to the foyer area? Was like literally dozens and dozens of kids and their families.
Oh my God, did they have like a pick and mix bar just to like
keep
them?
They're always I was like, what is going on? And they literally had to kind of fight your way through these kids.
Bring out the kiddie crack.
Then the poor guy, the guy who runs the BFI TV screening events like this, always does a speech at the beginning, you know, to thank the BBC and to kind of intro the show. And honestly, getting these kids to quieten down and focus and shut the fuck up while he is really, as I said to him afterwards, you did a really good job of just patiently waiting for them all to work. Never seen anything like it. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. A really posh screening of this thing, and everyone's, you know,
it's like herding cats.
Herding cats. It was very funny. So that is what I've been watching. James,
I'm going to keep this super brief because we're about 4 hours into the podcast and we haven't started it yet. So yours. I also obviously watched Night Manager last week, so I won't talk about that. I have been pressing on with Steel and enjoying it an awful lot. I've nearly finished Steel. I think I've got one episode left to go, but that's an absolute laugh. I said laugh riot. It's a laugh and it is a riot. It's not a laugh riot because it's not a comedy, but it's a lot of fun.
Yes, I actually finished it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And it is really fun.
It's really fun. Yeah. It's a really fun show.
It goes in such a different direction after the opener.
Oh, it does.
Oh, does it?
Mm.
Oh, I watched two.
It's absolutely batshit to the point where it bears no resemblance
proudly,
to reality.
Yeah. Proudly batshit. Yeah, it's one of those, definitely.
Yeah, it's just, it's a little bit heightened. I also finished The Penguin, which I was unprepared for. Like, the ending of that is really bleak. Like, it's like, and not beak, because, you know, penguin. It's very, very, it's really, like, it's a real downer. I was quite thrown. I mean, in many ways, quite bold, quite audacious, the way they finish it. But it's, it was quite something. It left me kind of a little bit like, you know, those things where you finish it and you're just staring at the credits, like, in a funk, just like, huh. Okay.
Is there another series coming?
Unclear. I don't imagine so, but there have been discussions about maybe, possibly, perhaps, but I don't think there's anything concrete going on. Christian Milioti, I think, gets asked about it all the time. But
I watched the Actors on Actors. I'm going to stop going on about the Actors on Actors shorts, but I did watch the Colin Farrell one where Jesse Buckley talks to him about his performance in Penguin, and it's really good.
Because I was watching that because the prosthetics are amazing, like genuinely amazing. Like, you would watch that and you would not think it's a man wearing prosthetics. Yeah. But then the other question is, like, it's also You would never, ever in a million years know Colin Farrell was in it unless you knew Colin Farrell was in it. Which begs two questions. I mean, on the one hand, why do you hire an actor like Colin Farrell if you're going to render him unrecognisable? And if you are an actor like Colin Farrell, why do you want to be in something when you're unrecognisable and you've got to go through however many hours of prosthetics? But equally, the performance is extraordinary. And his little, you know how, like, again, films, Heath Ledger as the Joker, he had those little mannerisms, like the licking of his lips and things like that. And Farrell does that a lot, unless he does a very specific top lip lick from like right to left quite regularly. Like, and it just, it gives the Penguin this kind of slightly fidgety, shifty kind of demeanor. It gives him a real quality, and I think it's genius.
He's no Danny DeVito, though, is he?
Oh, no Danny DeVito.
In terms of iconic penguins?
Yeah. Mm. I think we said this when we reviewed it. We did review it, didn't we? It is so weird that, yeah, that he is unrecognizable, and yet it kind of does work.
It's so good.
I think because we all know it's him. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It kind of, you're like, oh, okay, kind of Farrell's doing this.
Because it's not his face. It's not his voice. Yeah. It's not his physique. It's not his gait, his demeanor. There is nothing of Colin Farrell that you would recognize in that performance, except that it's an extraordinary performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Which does give it the kudos, yeah. I think. Yeah. Interesting.
But yeah. Very, very good. And the last thing I watched randomly was two episodes of Fawlty Towers.
Oh,
it's hard to say why.
That is random.
It is hard to say why.
I mean, it's always on Gold, isn't it?
Always. Runs and repeat. I think it's the law, actually. You're not allowed to not have it on.
And you watched two episodes?
At some point. Yeah, I watched two episodes. Funnily enough, the episodes I watched were The Germans and Communication Problems, which are famous for what reason, Boydie?
They are in the play we saw together on the West End stage.
Yes, those are the two episodes that make up the play, and that is part of the reason why I watched them.
Yeah.
Because they blended them together to turn them into the stage production, because they're two very good episodes.
You two went to...
Yes, we had a theatre date.
Yeah, it's true.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Let's. What snacks did you have at that theatre date?
I think packet of crisps. I'm pretty sure.
I think I had Maltesers.
Maybe. Okay.
On one of my dates with Boyd, we sat next to Julia Davis, and it was one of the greatest moments of my life. And I was so excited because she took a fruit pastel from me.
Did she?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But like, did you offer it, or did she just take it?
I said, well, I could feel Boyd looking at me as if to say, don't fucking say anything stupid or try not to speak. And I went, do you like a fruit pastel? And she went, oh yes, I would. And she took a fruit pastel. She was a delight.
What was that?
I think it was a musical. We were at some sort of musical, which is, it seems weird because you hate musicals.
What was going on there?
I don't know. But it was wonderful.
Once again, bringing us back to the subject at hand, which is, checks notes, television. So... let us move on to this week's listener question. And we're going to start, before we do, with a listener response. And this one comes from Mel, who last week's podcast was largely dedicated to. And Mel says, you guys, no one told me I'd get a whole episode dedicated to me for £3.50. Worth every penny. Thank you for all the suggestions. You were pretty much spot on about all the things you thought I'd probably seen. You hit the nail on the head with Colin from Accounts. That was exactly the type of show we loved and we're looking for more of. A good handful that we haven't seen, including the Canadian one, Steph. I'm also going to have a rewatch of 2012 and W1A. Hey. Thanks, Boyd.
Yeah.
Steph, in answer to your question about my age, I think I'm more Boyd's vintage, although not 100% sure. My first TV as a kid was black and white, if that gives you a steer. Please, can we have a Mel section every week? P.S., James, although your list was full of dramedies and kind of missed the point.
Yes.
Oh, Mel.
Thank you, Mel.
It did give me some ideas for non-bedtime TV. P.S., I pretty much always listen while exercising, so thank you very much.
Wow, so basically what she's saying is your completely useless, not to the point list is now become useful.
I mean, that's nice.
If that's your takeaway, then fine.
I love Mel.
Mel is a star.
Mel's amazing.
Well, that is not this week's listener question. Sorry, Mel. This week's listener question comes from Annika Sawney, and Annika says, hi, Pod. After binging Heated Rivalry, which is totally worth all the hype, I'd love to know which TV shows you think portray sex in a realistic and sensitive way and which shows failed to do this. Surely Normal People is the pinnacle for its depiction of sex. This after Boyd has been talking about the recent, I'm not even sure you're talking about that scene, but there's obviously there's been much buzz about the threesome from a recent episode of Industry. Mm. So sensitive depictions of intimacy on television.
Right. Can I dive in and just say, Okay, firstly, sorry, I seem to have a cold just in one nostril, which is really annoying.
Too much information.
I'm so sorry.
Any kind of nasal blockage is annoying. Yeah.
It's really annoying.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
What?
What is happening?
Okay, so I'm going to dive straight in. The subject at hand,
television.
Okay, right. So TV, I'm going to dive right in and I'm going to say something that you're both going to disagree with.
Oh, God.
But I'm going to say it anyway. I truly believe, not every scene, of course, because some of them are insane, and not every episode because some of them are insane, Sex and the City dealt with real sex amazingly.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right, yeah. Oh.
I agree.
In the original TV show.
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay,
it forefronted female sexuality, which wasn't something that was generally depicted on television. No, forefronted. I mean, it may have full frontal, I didn't see that, but I've never heard that word. It forefronted.
No, it forefronted. I think he's invented it.
Did I make it up?
I think
forefronted.
So.
Yeah.
It's possible I've made that word up.
No, I like it.
Do you know what? I'm going to own it. I'm going to keep using it. It forefronted female sexuality, and I actually think that was a very, you know, a very powerful thing that it did back then.
And I am actually a really big fan of the early seasons. So see, if you go back and watch season one and season two, they're grittier.
Oh,
And the dialogue, would you agree?
I would say, actually, it was a really good, proper, edgy, bold, all those words, show.
Absolutely.
Which you're 100% right. Yeah.
So I think that is, for me, and I totally agree, normal people, absolutely. That does, realistic sex in that is amazing. But I do think that Sex and the City, unfortunately for lots of people because of what happened with then Just Like That and everything, and people were calling it hate watch and all of that kind of stuff, it loses some of the credit that it really warrants in its earlier seasons.
And because of the terrible films, particularly.
And because of the terrible films.
Pissing in the pool, boy. As I've always said, you can retroactively destroy something by building on it in a bad way.
Yeah, and I think that's what they did ultimately, which is unfortunate. But, I still actually think, you know, Just Like That dealt with their sex scenes well. No? Do you not agree with that?
Sometimes it did. Yeah, it was trying to go for the same approach, and I think it certainly was probably one of the better elements of Unjust Like That. They retained that quite kind of open minded look at sexuality.
I really did enjoy Cynthia Nixon's whole sexual exploration, and also I think Charlotte and Harry, you know, sex when you're a married couple and you've been married, I thought that they dealt with that really effectively as well. And I'm just going to say, a show that I think is not dealt with it so well but is absolutely incredibly entertaining is The Hunting Wives, which is basically porn.
Yes, we did review that on this podcast.
Hunting Wives. Yeah, there's a lot of boobage in The Hunting Wives, isn't there? Yeah.
There's a shit ton of boobage. Yeah.
It's quite old school in that sense. It's like something from the 70s.
It's like an erotic drama, isn't it?
Mm. It's not realistic in any way. It's the most unrealistic.
As I pointed out, there are two scenes in the opening episode alone in which one character is spying on two people having sex, as if it happens on a constant half hourly basis, you know, in the lives of these people.
What are the chances that you're just looking out the window and you're just like,
and the people having sex in full view of the window are trying to keep it secret, so they choose to have it in full view of the window in case there's anyone who wants to have a look.
If you watch that, you just think everyone in small town America is having orgies all the time in their jacuzzis.
Mm. Yeah.
I can't say that they're not.
No, that may be accurate.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. Okay, thoughts that I had on this particular subject. This is not generally a good example of this.
That's a great way to answer a question.
Yeah, I think
this is going to be like your suggested comedy dramas of last week.
No, I'm going to say a show that I would say was not sensitive in its depictions of sex would be Game of Thrones. However, season 7, Grey Worm and Missandei, that is a very clear exception to that. That is a great scene.
I couldn't agree with you more. That is such a sensitively, brilliantly done scene. God, you know what, Natalie Emmanuel, when she takes off her thing and... Do you know the scene?
I think I know it with Jacob Anderson. Yes,
that's right.
And she takes off her clothes and she just stands before him naked. Oh, yeah. That's beautiful. Yes, that is a really beautiful
moment.
It's
a great, great sequence.
I love Natalie Emmanuel. She has a great figure.
thank you. But there's a lot of sex position in Game of Thrones. There's a lot of sexual assault in Game of Thrones. Some of it is lurid, some of it is not. I wouldn't say it's generally delicately handled, but that one in particular is. Sex education, I would say, is a really good example of this.
That's on my list, yeah.
Because it has this overwhelming lack of shame about sexuality and sexual practices and kink and all sorts of things. And, you know, whether it be, you know, they tackle masturbation, you know, the was it beginning of...
are you about to do a list of all of...
No, but like, remember beginning of season two where you get that incredible Asa Butterfield wanking montage, which is like nothing you've ever seen before. But it deals with things like vaginismus and stuff like that, which again, you don't generally see dealt with on television.
It deals with what?
Vaginismus.
What the hell is vaginismus?
Well, to be fair, I guess it's not. It's dealt with on the show. It is a contracting of the vaginal muscles that prevents intercourse.
Oh my God. Why did you have to do this thing?
Can I just say, it's very childish of me, but I never thought I'd see James mansplaining vaginismus to Steph. It's classic.
The whole thing.
It was a contracting. I don't know. Look, this is all gone horribly wrong.
We don't know if the video's working this week, but I really hope it is.
And the thing is, I'm the only one here with a vagina. I don't know why I find that so offensive.
Anyway, let's move on. But Sex Education was one of the very first shows to have an intimacy coordinator. Thank you very much. Yes. So it was famous for that.
Yes.
We've broken Steph. And the intimacy coordinator for that went on to work on Normal People. True story.
Well, there you go.
Yep, there you go. Go on, Boydie.
Okay, the show that changed, as I think Sex and City, you're absolutely right. Sex and City.
I know what you're going to say. I'm just saying.
Please let not be
well worth it. No, I'm not saying that. Girls.
Oh, I didn't know what
Lena
you were going to say.
Dunham's Girls. And it infuriates me. Girls gets left out of lots of conversations about all. Girls is one of the greatest TV shows of our time, and particularly brilliant in its depiction of sex, which was not particularly, I wouldn't say sensitive, because I think once you try and deliberately be sensitive, then you're kind of already getting into the realms of, you know, soft focus, you know, kind of sexual scenes. But in terms of realism and absolutely boldly going there with all kinds of sex, almost the list that James was halfway through going, it was phenomenal and groundbreaking. And she just got the tone so brilliantly right. In all the sex scenes in that show, and pretty much every episode, you know, deals with that.
Do you know what? One of those scenes I love. There's an Jemima Kirk, I think, was head and shoulders above everybody else in all the sex scenes, because obviously she was quite promiscuous.
Yeah, she did a lot of them.
There's an angry sex, and she was very. I'm going to say she was very generous with her body in that show.
She had some
tough things to deal with, and I thought she was excellent in that. But the angry sex scene between her and Adam Driver's character towards the end of the show, I thought was absolutely sensational, where they're breaking the apartment and everything, and then they ultimately end up having it's just amazing.
Yeah.
And actually, the first sex they have when they get together is also really good. I'm really gutted I didn't think of that. But maybe that's because of what you said, because it gets left out of things.
Yeah,
I love that show.
Because it's a woman. It's a woman. It's Lena Dunham's masterpiece. Yeah. And yeah, it gets left out. It's one of the greats. I would just mention, again, sensitivity, maybe not, but in terms of just... I'm trying to avoid the phrase balls to the wall, but I can't. In terms of full-on, out there... sexuality, The White Lotus. I mean, that is a show. I think Sex Education that you mentioned,
is
Girls.
It delicately handled on The White Lotus?
That's my point. Once you're trying to delicately handle something, I think, I'm acclaiming it. The original correspondent say that also just really outstandingly good sex scenes, I think.
So to speak.
I don't think sensitivity and all of that is what they're going for, but in terms of realism and boldness, The White Lotus takes all the awards from me.
Okay. We should mention Queer as Folk.
See, that's what I thought you were going to mention.
Oh, no,
when
I'm
you
getting
said
to
that.
It.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Finally, Queer as Folk totally changed the face of television.
Oh, you were going to say that?
Yeah. Absolutely. I was leaving it to last. I was leaving it to last. I don't know why. Absolutely extraordinary. And again, is it sensitive? Is that the word sensitive that the correspondent used about?
I believe that's the word that was used. Yes. Realistic and sensitive.
Sensitive. I mean, I don't think sensitivity is that important. I think realism is. And just in terms of just full-on, out-there, daring raunchiness, shall we say, Queer as Folk set the bar.
James, why are you looking at me like that?
That was not a raunchy look. There are cameras here. There's proof.
Yeah. So, yes, 100% Queer as Folk changed television.
That's a good point you make, though, because actually, you're like, not all sex is sensitive, is it? So why would it need to be? I think you're right. Realism is really important. That's, I think, the amazing thing about Queer as Folk is that is the kind of sex that people were having at that time. So why wouldn't we want it?
But crucially, something that wasn't depicted depicted on television. So yes. That's what. But equally, the L word is another good example of that, which was the L word would have been what, early noughties, I want to say.
I think so, yeah.
And again, just like forefronting sort of queer female relationship and sexuality, that wasn't something people saw.
He's really owning that word.
Forefronting is too close to full frontal. It's confusing. Every time you say it, it also forefronted full frontal.
Like, that was fine as well. Other ones I was going to say, when you talk about sort of like teen sex, Euphoria and Skins are probably two good examples.
Well, Euphoria definitely isn't sensitive.
In terms of realistic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, actually, Big Boys is very good on that front. That's very good depiction of university sex.
Mm.
I don't know how much sex you guys had in university, but I'm just saying that was a good depiction of it.
It's a very personal question. And
at no point did I get a cock in the eye, but you know.
No, you say that now.
But sure, like, if that was your experience at university, who am I to judge?
That's for another X-rated podcast.
That's for the OnlyFans.
And on that point, finally, just to reiterate again, industry is absolutely driven by its sex scenes. They're absolutely key and crucial to the whole tone of the show, and they are extraordinary, so I would say.
Is there a lot of sex with Jon Snow in that?
Yeah, totally. That's what Kit Harington, I said that when I was talking about what I've been watching. He embraces the sex scenes.
No, I know you said he's amazing. I'm definitely going to get
another guy particularly
then.
What she's asking is, do they forefront the full frontal?
They do forefront the full frontal.
There you go.
In fact, almost like, it's interesting because his character, Henry Muck, the brilliantly named Henry Muck.
Henry Muck. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, exactly. He is at the forefront of the whole season's sexual peccadilloes, if you like. It's kind of about him and his sexuality, etc.
Okay.
I'm trying not to give anything away. Yeah.
Peccadilloes.
Yeah.
You.
Good word. Right. What else was I going to say on this? I was going to mention fellow travellers.
Oh yeah, good.
Toe suckage.
Yes.
Extraordinary toe suckage. In fact, in that. Also, like, not being funny, The Americans was a really interesting show for this because their use of sex as a weapon, as spies, but then also their relationship and the sexuality depicted in the show. I thought was more realistic than sensitive.
Mm.
But it was a rare depiction, I would say, of an on-screen televisual 69.
Right.
Have I lowered the tone?
Moving on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's move on.
I think it's
sorry.
Time to move on.
Anyway.
Great question.
Great question. Thanks for sending that in. If you would like your question read out either here or on the glorious Pilot Plus, do send them in to the email address pilottv@empiremagazine.com. Time for this week's news. And what do you have for me, Boydie?
Well, we've already talked about how
the semi-annual warehouse clearance event is on at Sleep Outfitters. Save up to $1,000 store-wide with our lifetime price guarantee and 100% comfort guarantee. Why shop anywhere else? Limited time clearance savings only at Sleep Outfitters. Visit sleepoutfitters.com.
Our Kay and Steph's favorite shrinkage is...
Oh, no, don't do that. Shrinking, sorry.
It's been renewed for a fourth season, as the first season arrives.
Third season arrives.
Sorry, slip of the tongue. Talking of sex scenes.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. And also in ongoing Apple half-hour comedy news, Ted Lasso season 4, they've released... Pictures and photos, both. Confirmed a summer release for the highly awaited, long-awaited new season of Ted Lasso, in which Jason Sudeikis' character, Ted, is back at AFC Richmond, but this time training the women's team. So the focus of this season is going to be on women's football. Well, the men's football, which I think is a really clever idea. I mean, it's not that clever, but, you know, it's a good idea.
It's a really basic idea, but it's going to be entertaining.
Yeah. No, it's a good idea because it changes I think it will change the tonality of the show, etc. They're forefronting.
I can't believe he's stolen your word.
They're forefronting women's football as opposed to male football. But all the core cast members, Hannah Waddingham, Juno Temple, Brett Goldstein, of course, Brendan Hunt, they're all back. It's been confirmed for this new season. So it's just such a great... I associate that show with Shrinking because it's got a lot of talent across the different... Shares various talent, but Goldstein mainly, across the shows. And it's got a similar tone, I think, which is you kind of want to hang out with. It's almost the opposite of having the Bell End test. Those shows, Ted Lasso and Shrinking, are the opposite of the Bell End test, where everyone is kind of good
yeah.
and decent.
Except right. Nate when he went wrong.
Except Nate when he went wrong. And even that was kind of jarring, wasn't it? Because it was such a kind of wrongness in the middle of all the rightness that everyone else had.
Right. I'm holding up my hands to say that I've never watched Ted Lasso. No, and I did admit this. I know. I admitted this to Boyd.
Yeah.
I know. We've just been raising a child.
I feel like you would love it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what Boyd said. Boyd said, you really like it. Do you know what his actual words were? It's like shrinking, but better. And I was like, Boyd.
I mean, it is literally that. Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to get too much into this, but I've already told both of you that you haven't watched enough episodes of Shrinking to have an opinion.
But I've watched more episodes of Shrinking than you've watched episodes of Ted Lasso.
Thank you, Boyd. Point well made.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right.
Anyway.
We should point out that everyone who'd been petitioning for us to watch more Shrinking to honour Kay, we did it in a very Pilot TV way, where we reviewed it on Pilot Plus when Kay wasn't there. So that was nice, and
true.
I'm sure she appreciated it.
Very
I know,
true.
I'm in talks with Kay to do a spoiler special, though, on Shrinking.
Okay, yeah. Good. That'll be good.
Of course it'll be good, because Shrinking's fantastic.
Let's talk about Daredevil Born Again, which is coming back on the 24th of March to
is
Disney
it?
Plus. Yes.
Okay.
Boyd, not impressed at all. Did you not enjoy Daredevil Born Again?
I
can't remember.
I liked it, the episode, the first episode, but I did not watch any more.
Did you not? So I watched all of it.
Yeah. It's kind of your job to watch all of it, because it's a Marvel show, isn't it? You have to watch it.
As a Marvel shill, yeah. I obviously have to watch them all, yes. So I did watch it. I very much enjoyed it. I didn't love it. I thought it was 3 stars, but I liked it. Alex Godfrey was a bigger fan. In fact, he castigated me about this in the office this very morning.
Because of the news story that it's back.
That it's back, yeah. And it's exciting. And because the official Empire review of Wonder Man uses the sentence, one of the best MCU shows to date.
What?
And about Wonder Man.
Oh, you didn't like Wonder Man, really?
No, I thought it was fine. But like, we were basically discussing whether or not actually, although that statement initially jars with me, you think about it and go, actually, the bar's reasonably low, like across the board. So actually, maybe.
Oh, it definitely is. Didn't the Empire review give it 4 stars?
Yes.
Yes, I think, and you'd give it 3.
I would give it 3.
So yeah, I think it's a 4-star show. I'm much more excited to carry on watching that than I was carrying on watching Daredevil, put it that way.
I'd agree with
Interesting.
That.
Interesting.
Can I say something about SNL? Because, you know, I was excited and you couldn't have given
a
shit.
Is this the British SNL?
The British SNL. So I was excited because for some reason that had completely, like, passed me by. But they've made some more appointments. So Lorne Michaels is exec producer, as I think you said, he's heavily involved. And, right, this might not be exciting to you, but it's exciting to me. Paulie Lovejoy, musical director. Annie Hardinge, I hope I'm saying that right, as costume designer, which is very important. And Kevin Fortune as, probably the most important, head of wigs, hair and makeup.
And can I say, I kind of know Annie and she's brilliant.
She
did Little Britain back in the day.
Well, there
she's
you go.
Worked with Man David a lot and other great comedies. She does a lot of great comedies down the years.
Right.
She's done,
so that shows how much they're putting into this, which is really, really exciting. And can I, for my second bit of news, I talk about something which people might say is not really news, but I want to bring it up because I love this show. So, Boyd, did you watch Sugar?
Yes.
Colin Farrell.
We reviewed it.
We did.
It's on the Straight Podcast.
So I loved Sugar. And as I said to James earlier, I feel that we should coin the term either sci-cry, sci-cry-fi, or cry-fi. One of those. Because it is a genre
of all of those together.
All of those. Okay. So I was like, God, I feel like, when is that coming back? Because I knew it had been renewed. And I just saw that there had been a report at the end of the year that they had new additions to the cast, which were Jin Ha, Laura Donnelly and Tony Dalton are all been cast now as series regulars. They must be filming it now. And if anyone has any more information about it, I'd like to know.
Well, Steph, it just so happens that I'm going to see every single major Apple person who works for Apple TV on Tuesday in Santa Monica, so I'm sure we'll be able to report
back on that one. Can you find out for me?
It's my main mission.
Right.
There's one thing I'm going to do, apart from get, what's it called?
Foundation
merch. Finding out what the hell's happening with that show.
Well, I tell you why, because it's doing one of the things that I hate, which I think it's on the verge of leaving too long between season one and season two.
Isn't it? Now it's already. It's,
yeah, you know,
how long are we going to have to wait for Severance? I mean, you know, it's going to be years.
Yeah,
isn't it?
But I think with this show, where it is genre busting, they need to keep the momentum slightly up. That is needs to be your only thing you need to do over there,
okay.
As well as take pictures of your breakfast.
Okay, I agree.
And swipe me. Merchandise.
Yeah.
And goodie bags.
Yeah.
And snacks if you can.
But
you want to bring back snacks from Santa Monica?
Yeah. Is there particularly good snacks? Put them in a Tupperware, bring them back.
And also, I think bringing in food, I think, is frowned upon. Generally.
I mean, look, you'll take that risk for me. I know you will.
Okay.
Okay, that was all I needed to say.
Did you see the news, because you're a massive Blue Lights fan, that Richard Dormer is coming back?
I did, yes. And I thought that was a particularly interesting thing given what happened to Richard Dormer in the first season of that show. However, this is all flashback stuff.
Yeah.
So he's going to be in it, Jonty's going to be in it, the slightly, shall we say, privileged police officer who was in season one and a bit of season two, whose name escapes me, but you will tell me, won't you, Boyd?
Which one are you talking about? Sorry.
Boyd won't tell me. But anyway, she's going to be back as well. And so it's going to fill in some sort of like retroactive continuity.
Hannah McLean from Malpractice, the solicitor.
A solicitor, Jen Robinson.
Yeah, so Jen, because Jen was a police officer and then she became a solicitor and then she just sort of fell off the face of the earth. But she's going to be back as well. Very, very excited because Blue Lights is one of the best things on television.
Yes.
And fabulous and everyone should watch it.
Declan Lawn and Adam Patterson, who are the co-creators, say, "We're very excited to bring this series of Blue Lights. It reveals a lot of the dark secrets, examines what justice looks like in Belfast today, and ties together the past, the present, and futures of Grace, Annie, and Tommy in an action-packed story." So, yes, interesting. It is brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant show.
It's very good. Very, very good indeed.
Have you got any new stories?
No, I'm done with news.
I just wanted to mention, I'm quite excited about this show, Vladimir. Do you know about this? This is a Netflix show from Sharon Horgan's production company. And it's got Rachel Weisz is in it. She's the female lead. Leo Woodall from The White Lotus and that really entertaining show on...
One Day.
Thank you. Monday. No, the really entertaining
show. Oh, you mean the other one, Prime Target?
Yeah. Prime Suspect?
Prime Target. Prime Number-related mathematics thriller.
We all love Leo Woodall. And it's an 8-part series in which she's married to John Slattery from Mad Men, but she meets Leo Woodall and she immediately lusts after him, as far as I can make out. And she addresses to camera her feelings. So it's got like Fleabag style thing going on.
Breaking the fourth wall.
Exactly. But Rachel Weisz, Leo Woodall, I mean, and John Slattery. What a cast.
I love John Slattery.
And that's March 5th on the Netflix for that limited series.
Okay.
Vladimir. There you go.
I believe that calls an end to news.
Yes.
Excellent. Let's move on then to this week's reviews, this week's retro review section. And we will begin with Waiting for the Outs from Dennis Kelly, which is based on The Life Inside, A Memoir of Prison, Family and Learning to Be Free by Andy West. And this is Josh Finnan as Dan. He's a teacher who gets a new job giving philosophy lessons in a men's prison. But you've probably heard this already or seen it for yourself by this point, to be honest. But this is not your average prison drama, and it is something altogether, I would say, more wholesome. Boyd, you have already talked about it on this show, so I can't call upon you. Steph, Hume me. After having a good lock at this one, did you find it a little Confucius, or can it Foucault right off? I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I can only apologise.
At least you made an effort.
Thank you.
I love you. Okay. Right, this has got a few touch points to me, a few good touch points, because as soon as anything has anything to do with fertility in it, I'm like, oh, I'm listening, right? Because the main character is with a woman who's having fertility issues, which is like this crazy subplot, and he's like got a brother who's just had a baby, and he's in a time in his life where he's confused about his own existence and his future, which makes it all the more enticing. I enjoyed it, but I don't think I enjoyed it as much as I thought I would. It's fine. He goes into the prison. You meet all these prisoners, and they obviously all have backstories, and there's reasons why they're really angry. And one of them has a daughter, and there's obviously a great backstory there. I only watched one of them, so I would just say that. And whilst he's in this prison giving this kind of lecture and trying to engage with these prisoners, the whole backstory of the girl that he's sleeping with, who's having an embryo implanted, is going on, and he's like, oh no, I want to be a dad. And so he's wrestling with some personal demons. Also interesting, but it didn't hold me. And I feel bad because I know somebody wrote in and said this was great and we missed it and like that, and I was excited to watch it, but it didn't grab me, and I can't quite hit on the point that it didn't grab me. I don't know whether I didn't find the main character as engaging as I wanted him to be, but that may be because I only watched one episode, so I will just say that it was fine. I didn't feel compelled to watch any more though. Sorry, Boyd.
I am
Are you astounded?
Disappointed.
I'm a bit disappointed with myself.
Aghast.
Shocked. And honestly, appalled.
Yeah. Are you
appalled.
Both?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I think it is an exceptional show, but I think probably you need to watch more than the first episode sets the scene. It sets the tone, and you know, you get the really interesting core of the memoir, which is that, you know, this guy's putting himself, who's had a bad experience with his dad and his brother to a lesser extent of prison and crime, etc., decides to put himself into prison effectively to teach, to talk to the prisoners in his group about highfalutin philosophy, of which James mentioned most of the philosophers that they cover in the show in his hilarious pun-filled introduction. So you've got him. I think he is a really interesting character, and I think Josh Finn is phenomenal, considering he played a complete idiot in the show with Martin Freeman, the cop show with Martin Freeman.
Responder,
thank you. He's also in coming up, How to Get to Belfast, Lisa McGee's
new show. Yeah.
He's in that.
How to Get to Heaven from Belfast.
Thank you. He's a brilliant actor because he is properly chameleonic. You can say this couldn't be more different. This guy, who's a very smart, clever guy and teaching philosophy, from the guy he played in the Martin Freeman show. So you've got him. I think the scenes depicting him interacting with the group about philosophy and about their lives, and as it goes on, I think it could seem like we've seen self-help scenes before, we've seen this kind of thing before. It's not entirely original that a drama built around a film or TV drama built around someone teaching prisoners, interacting with prisoners in a kind of group setting. I think these scenes, though, are so smart and subtle and authentic and believable, and all of the characters, all of the prisoners, are totally three-dimensional and not in any way stereotyped. I think it's really clever the way they and you get to know bits of their stories as the six-part series goes on. I watched episode 4, I think, recently, which has a really moving storyline with one of the prisoners wanting to send a message to his son about to wish you, and he wanted to read him a bedtime story.
Oh.
And it's so, yeah, exactly. You're right.
I admit that whilst I was watching it, I did wonder whether my enjoyment of it was because it was coloured by the fact that, obviously, being the editor of a crime magazine, I read a lot of crime all the time. And maybe the subtlety, maybe I thought, God, I can't fucking appreciate the subtlety of this because I'm so bombarded with it. So I take all of that on
board.
Yes,
you're numbed to the subtleties of crime.
A little.
Because these are, most of them are criminals, or, they end up in prison for various different reasons. But the way it deals with their crimes and them being criminals is just really smart and clever and three-dimensional and not in any way kind of exaggerated or melodramatic. And that's what I love about it. Its tone is really beautifully established. And so in the scene, sometimes there are scenes that are quite tense, because with him and his brother, played by Stephen White, his brother's, he's quite kind of off the cuff and emotional and, annoyed about stuff. They're both dealing with trauma from their childhood involving their dad. And the way the two of the different characters deal with it is interesting and very different. And yet in the end, what makes it clear is they're both suffering in their own ways from what happened with their dad. So I just think it hasn't got a big driving narrative. It is maybe partly why you've underwhelmed, was because it is, long scenes of people chatting about philosophy and their lives, which are the crux of the show, aren't inherently, there's no car chases or, explosions or stuff like that.
What's worth saying is you're really basic and you just didn't understand
it. No, I'm not saying that. And you know what? That is a fair point. And I think probably, I will get onto it in a minute, but I watched it after I'd watched His and Hers.
I was going to say the contrast. Yeah.
And I think maybe coloured my opinion.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to finish my comments by saying you could not get two more divorced tonally things than that. His and Hers, we'll get to in a minute, which is just insane and ludicrously contrived and over the top and ridiculous, with this, which is all about the authenticity and the realism and the subtlety.
Well, to an extent. So, for example, you take Alex Fearn's character, Keith, who this just improbably well-versed in philosophy and classics prisoner, who just like benefits of a classical education, who just sort of second guesses him at every, well, I think you're fine, actually, when Hume said this, he actually meant, like, you know, I think there were elements of like, okay, you know how Aaron Sorkin writes incredible dialogue that no one would ever speak? I would say these are incredible scenes, which I don't think...
But based on a memoir.
It is based on a memoir. I do think that they have been elevated for the sake of drama, mm-hmm. and I'm glad they have been, because I think they're incredibly effective. And obviously, I'm not saying all people in men's prison aren't, they don't know philosophy. Of course they don't know. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying
yes,
that...
Yes, you are. You're being very patronising towards prisoners.
It takes a lot of clever people to commit a heist. I'm just saying that. Yeah. And they're in prison.
But to get caught as well.
Yeah, oh, well, we just have a lot of cameras everywhere now.
That's true. But no, that's not what I'm saying at all. It's just that in the same way that, you know, take Dawson's Creek, take The West Wing, you get people who are improbably articulate and very good at this stuff. I think there's an element of that here. But also, I think that's part of the joy in watching it. I think those scenes are wonderful because of that. And not all of the characters in that sort of like fall into that mold. Like there's, as you say, the guy with his daughter, and there's a whole thing about that in the first episode, someone who wants to message their son. And yet I think what it does is it shows that these people are more than the sum of their criminal past. Like, they are complex human people with human problems, and it really humanizes them in a way that I find, you know, and I don't watch a lot of prison dramas because I find them quite traumatic, but there is a format. Prison dramas are normally quite harrowing, quite shocking. Yeah. They're about assault and abuse and abject human misery. And this is not that. This is the opposite of that. It's about, like, the triumph of the human spirit and all these lovely things like that. But also, Josh Finnan is really, really funny. There's a whole thing with a shoe in the first episode, which kind of made me giggle. There's a dinner party scene that comes up, which people, I think, will enjoy. I just think it's a really, really, really well written, really well observed show. I'd be fascinated to know tonally how it plays with the memoir, like, because it has a very heightened, almost, it's not, I mean, how would you characterize this genre wise? Because it's not the comedy.
No, I think it's a wryly funny drama. I think it's just a drama, but I think it's a drama built on the wry humour of its main character and the situations he gets in.
Because there are moments...
Yeah, but also very believable...
Yeah, it's very subtle and it's organic.
None
and it's
of
real.
It's silly in
any way. No. The S word does not come into play.
Yeah, it's grounded in reality. And
is it not a bit silly in points? I think, you know, like when the blood in Hertz is...
it's absurd, but I don't think it's necessarily silly.
Yeah, I think it's stuff that... Because he gets himself into scrapes, shall we say.
What's interesting about it, because there's a whole comment on kind of masculinity at the heart of this as well, isn't there? And this idea that because he's going into prison to teach, he doesn't feel that his trainers are masculine enough, so he buys steel-toed work boots and then fucks it up completely. And it's like, that in itself is inherently funny. And there is a kind of... There's a weird sort of almost masculinity back and forth between the hyper-masculine prisoners and he, who's this
and
philosophy lecturer who's very middle class, and his brother who has done time, right? And he's constantly seeing visions of his father as well, who was abusive and did time. So, you know, I get what people said. People were saying this is a really special show and it will very likely be on a lot of people's shows of the year list, and I think that is a fair description of it. I think it's only six parts, isn't it? Short show. I think it's a must watch. I do.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm just going to say, I have already said that I'm prepared to admit that my judgment may have been clouded. So I'm going to go back and watch a couple more episodes of this.
Okay.
I'm presuming by this time next week, by the time we could do our next podcast, you'll have watched all episodes.
I would have watched
and
all of
yeah. everything anyone I, yeah. connected to it has ever done.
It's not. And I do want to make the point. I do think everybody in it was very well acted. It didn't grab me. It didn't grab me, but I am prepared to admit that's probably because I was watching a lot of High Octane at the time.
You were on it. You were sucking on High Octane.
I was sucking on High Octane. Yeah.
Waiting for the Out Then, which is available in its entirety on the iPlayer, and if you are not in the UK, I don't know how you watch it. I don't even know if you can.
No, it's a good question. I don't know.
That'll be a Boogle.
Mm.
Can you access the iPlayer outside of the UK?
No, you
can't.
Because
you've got to be paying Auntie cash, haven't you?
That's right.
Yeah. I presume it'll be on like BritBox or I think BBC America still.
One would think.
One of those outlets type of thing. Yeah.
Next up in our mixtape of recent omissions, we have the notorious and, according to me, critically annihilated His and Hers on Netflix. This is William Oldroyd's show, and it adapts Alice Feeney's novel of the same name. It sees John Bernthal and Tessa Thompson as exes from a small town in Georgia, and they both end up investigating a murder, one as a cop and the other as a hungry reporter. Steph has already talked about this one, but let us do a kind of His and Hers, and we will begin with His and turn to you, Boydie.
Well, I had watched, as I mentioned in last week's What You've Been Watching section, I'd watched the first couple of episodes of this already, because it was one that we missed because Netflix didn't really make screeners available, as far as I was aware. It suddenly arrived on the... Sometimes you get literally like 10 days notice, suddenly a big show's arriving on Netflix and you haven't got time to review
but,
it.
But we theorised that was because everyone thought it was rubbish.
Well, and then there was the whole controversy about, yeah, James reported that he'd read, seen all the reviews and they were all rubbish, even though actually they weren't all that rubbish.
I mean...
Some of them were, some of them weren't, as this is wont to exaggerate these things.
I don't
know
what
full
you
analysis,
mean.
If you want a full analysis of
subscribe to Pilot
me,
Plus.
Subscribe to Pilot Plus of James's all critics say it's terrible theories. Anyway, then I watched the rest of it. I've watched the whole entire thing now. Have you watched the whole thing?
I haven't watched the whole thing.
Yeah, I know you have, Steph. Anyway, you kind of have to see the whole thing.
Because without, again, don't spoil
no,
anything.
I'm not
but from yes, steady, Boyd. But from what I gather, like it is a bit like smoke. It is thing after thing after thing.
Yeah. So put it this way. You get to, in the final episode, I think there's six or eight, I think eight.
There's six.
Short for Netflix. Anyway, you get to the sixth episode. Oh, the crime has been solved. And then, hold on a minute, there's another 40 minutes of this to go. It's a bit like the, you know, Stranger Things finale when there was an hour to go and you thought the whole thing had been wrapped up. But no, and another thing. It's like, and remember Steve Jobs when he did his presentations for Apple, always put at the end, and another thing, we're just giving you a new iPhone. This has a whole new thing that happens in the finale. And you can't... It's so ridiculous that it does impact on the rest of the series because, well, you've got this fucking ridiculous ending that obviously is from the novel. But I have to say that it is a weird... It's a really weird show because it just... The little details of it are bizarre. Like, it's got an overarching gimmick, which is that, as you explained in your intro, there's this crime. Both of the main protagonists, who are estranged husband and wife, played by Tessa Thompson and John Berthold, know the victim, and they're both investigating it on their own terms, her as a reporter for this news show, him as an actual cop, a detective. And that, so you've got this gimmick, they're both seeing it from their point of view, and both kind of like, and then you've got their various other kind of lovers and things to complicate matters. By the way, is it just me? Or does Pablo Schreiber, who's another major male character, look almost exactly like John Bernthal?
Yeah.
Talk about having a type.
You think?
Yeah,
yeah, he does.
Really,
he does.
Similar. Kind of quite long-faced, white, similar-aged... Like stubbly.
I'm not sure I see that.
Similar looking.
No, I know.
They're definitely in the same vein, put it that way. Like,
the,
you know.
The bone structure.
Which, yeah, bone structure, et cetera. Thank you. Thank you for supporting this. But it kind of affects the show. And it kind of makes sense in a way. But just the performances and the direction and the way it's shot, the way it's edited, it's just weird. I found it had a whole kind of peculiar tone to it that it wasn't quite, that I can't quite put my finger on. There are flashbacks to kids or these girls bullying each other at school that are kind of weirdly shot in an almost like soft focusy type effect, but not quite, because I think maybe like they're reined that in. It's quite clear when there are flashbacks, you don't need to be visually told because it's quite clear what's going on. And just the whole thing has a very strange off-kilter tone to it, albeit, and yet it's a very much a mainstream, self-referentially borderline idiotic, but certainly out there crime thriller that knows full well that it is ridiculous, particularly when it gets to that finale. And I absolutely had a whale of a time. I very much enjoyed it, and I in no way regret devoting 6 hours, more or less, to my time, despite all the apparently negative reviews.
The annihilation.
The annihilation. The critical annihilation that it's got. But this is, as we go back to, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, they love this stuff. Netflix cannot get enough of these absolutely borderline preposterous, self-aware, silly, crime, drama, thriller type shows, self-contained, you know, not limited series type of thing. They love them and they're churning them out, and I bring them on. I enjoy most of them. And this one is up there partly because of that absolutely fucking ridiculous ending.
Okay, right. Imagine if B&M made a version of Mayor of Easttown and then it married Cruel Intentions, okay?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
the film, yeah. Cruel Intentions.
Yeah.
That is what this is. And even though this man over here was incredibly scathing about it...
James, in case people think there's...
James.
Yes, right. This is an audio medium, Steph.
This is so incredibly enjoyable to watch. And it's not just me, it's not just Boyd, it's people on the ground. If you ask people at the moment what they are watching, they'll be like, His and Hers, and can you believe the ending of The Traitors? That is what people are watching. And the reason they're watching it is because it's so utterly jam-packed, full of thrilling entertainment. I don't have... I know you keep saying it's like idiotic and I didn't find it that idiotic.
Oh, really?
No, and oh, also, wow. Okay. I've been polling.
Idiotic
because
in a good way.
People, by the third episode, yeah. I said to my husband, this is the person who's the killer and this is what's happened.
And I
messaged you both about it, and that turned out to be it. And there have been a couple of other females who've also said, oh yeah, yeah, right, oh. I knew. And then all the men I know are like, exactly what you said. It finished and there was 40 minutes and I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I think I found it quite obvious that it was that was going to be the ending, and the ending is...
No spoilers.
No, I'm not going to say the end, but the ending is, it's sensational, but maybe again, that it is a sensational ending.
It is literally... It is idiotic, isn't it?
I don't think so.
Wow.
I don't think it is idiotic. I think people are being a bit scathing about this when actually they just, and you, even though you're being slightly scathing about it, you're admitting that you fully enjoyed it.
Totally.
I truly believe you and I could write one of these, by the way, but...
Got to turn our attention
to it. Tessa Thompson's amazing, and even if the...
Is she though? And that's my thing.
She's great.
I'm not sure about the performances.
They're in it for it. No, they're giving it. They're giving it everything. They know what this is.
Yeah. You know who I loved? Sorry to interrupt.
No, go for it.
I love the character of the husband of the first victim.
Yeah.
Right? He is having a whale of a time in that role. I love him. And he comes back. He's in it and he comes back and maybe in like episode four or five or something. And I love him. He's such a kind of like, I don't give a fuck what you think about me. I'll do what I've done and blah, blah, blah. He's really entertaining. They're kind of supporting characters. And the other one who's really, this is what I mean about the performances. No, her boss, Tessa Thompson's boss at the news channel, at the channel, who's like weirdly like, he's like a jolly old guy, and then he suddenly gets really like annoyed about stuff, and then he just seems to be forgotten he's annoyed, and then he's being lovely to her. It has these supporting characters that could just weirdly depicted.
You have hit on exactly what I think this is about. I think every character doesn't give a fuck what anyone thinks about them. Everybody who's acting in this is just going for it. They know what it is. They know this is just purely about the entertainment. They're playing it absolutely to the nth degree. And I love it. Even like there's sex scenes in the back of cars, and it's just...
Oh, there's a lot of that.
A lot of it is very cliche.
Yeah.
Neither sensitively nor realistically depicted.
No, absolutely. But it rains a fuck of a lot as well, doesn't it?
It's unapologetically cliche, though. You know what you're in for from the first episode. So you're either in it and like, I'm going to be on board with it, or just it's just not for you. But it is for a lot of people. I can tell now.
Absolutely. And just one more thing, sorry, before James enters this. The other thing about that, the penultimate episode in the build-up to the big
reveal
is the action of that episode is insane as well. So it's not just the crazed ending, which I called idiotic. It's not so much idiotic as just pushing the boundaries of what you could possibly be plausible, shall we say. But then before that, all the action that goes on, it's like action after action after action in the penultimate episode that was also borderline moronic, you know, whatever word you want to use. And again, in an incredibly funny, entertaining way.
I think, it is cliche after cliche, like... cabins in the woods. Like you say, the rain is used a lot to signal this is the mood. Yeah. Something dramatic's going to happen, kids.
There's a lot. It's one of those. There's a lot of. I could talk about this all day, and I practically have. There's lots of stuff, like scenes where, like, he goes to. There's an old guy in a tarted up caravan who happens to be in charge of security for this thing.
Yeah.
And he just manages to find the date of the. So you can watch back the action that's been filmed months ago. Oh my God, the whole thing is fucking ridiculous. James.
We have 11 minutes till we get kicked out of the studio.
Go.
So I'm simply going to read you a couple of reviews.
Oh, God.
The Hollywood Reporter. Unfortunately, with almost no chemistry between them, Tessa Thompson and John Bernthal, they're lost in a sea of unconvincing misdirections that should have been a 90-minute feature, if that. The Playlist says, it wastes them, Tessa Thompson and John Bernthal, on a prestige-looking soap that mistakes escalation for depth and leaves you with the lingering sense you didn't watch a mystery unravel so much as a premise collapse.
Okay, well, that's bullshit, okay? And the people have spoken. I said this on the other podcast, the people have spoken. You know, it's a really nice romp through... a murder.
But what did you think?
I had quite a good time with it.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolute trash, but it's very watchable trash.
Yeah.
To be fair, I only watched the first episode. I'm not ruling out watching more of it because it's just...
You think that's trashy?
I mean, yeah. Because it's, again, like, this is not a gourmet burger. This is a really filthy burger. Like, this is a proper, like, you're in a train station, you've gone up to the concessions window, do you do hot food? Oh, we got this burger. Fine, I'll take it. Stick it in the microwave. It's one of those. Like, that's what this is. But you're so hungry, I'm pushing this metaphor, you've been on the train for ages, you eat it anyway and you love it.
Yeah, it's a hot dog served outside Arsenal Stadium yes, where I'm going tonight.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
I think you're being slightly... But it's not aesthetically that displeasing,
it's a funfair cheeseburger is what it is.
Visually it's quite... Yeah, it's quite eye-catching. Yeah, it's quite... There's some.
I think you're both being really a bit snobby. I'm not you so much. Okay, Boyd.
Hold on, yeah. No, I'm not saying about. But you've got to recognise it is apps. Jonathan Ross on his podcast, which
feel free to plug other podcasts, Boyd.
I'm sorry, I know I do plug other podcasts, but they, you know, all podcasts are available. Obviously, not as good as ours. Anyway, he was talking about how he knew someone who was approached to adapt the script from the novel, and they turned it down because it's so stupid in the end. So you know, it's like
the crux of this is okay. This is about watching TV for entertainment. Is this entertaining?
Yes. Oh God, bang! Yeah. 100%.
End of story.
I'm thrilled that I watched the whole thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm taking that personally.
And I recommend listeners to watch the whole thing too, because you will have a whale of a time.
Okay. And we're going to cover this very, very quickly. But finally this week we have, drum roll please, Silent Witness, the 29th series of Silent Witness. Never, ever accuse us of being late to the party. Yes, this first aired back in 1996, but Nigel McCreary's forensic drama is going strong on BBC One, and we decided, with our fingers firmly on the pulse, to take a look at quite what it takes for a show to become so beloved. Going strong 3 decades later. So who wants to give us a potted history of forensic psychology? Or forensic pathology, I should say.
Yeah, pathology.
Pathology, not psychology.
I picked this to review because it was a week where the only two really interesting new dramas launching on the Sunday of the week we're doing were embargoed.
One.
So I thought, what else can we do? We do shows that we've big shows that are causing a phenomenon, like, for example, His and Hers. As you say, Steph, it's definitely a phenomenon with the people on the ground. So I thought, well, the only other new show is Silent Witness is back for, as you say, its 29th series. And what's incredible is it started off with Amanda Burton back in 1996, as you say. She only lasted a mere 8 years.
And she came back, though, in series 25.
She did come back for a 25th anniversary special. But Amelia Fox has been doing the role for 21 years.
Oh, God.
Now, I think that must be some kind of record, non-soap record, because soaps have, you know, like Ken Barlow's been in it since like 70 years or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
In Coronation Street, etc. Been in a non-soap, in I think it's, I can't think, 21
okay, we
years.
Need a number crunch on
is
that.
Is phenomenal. Number crunch on that stat. But so I picked it because I'm interested. Russell T Davies talks a lot about, you know, a friend of the pod, about how, you know, just those weekly ongoing dramas on British TV, like your Casualties and your Holby City, I think is no more. And the soaps themselves, and this kind of show, that actually they're much often much better and much high quality than a non-snobbish person might think.
I feel attacked.
Yes. And so I wanted to delve into this because I haven't watched it myself for years and years. I watched it. Liz Carr was in it a few years ago. Liz Carr from the OA, who I met on the set of the OA. I haven't mentioned this for at least a few months, but I went on the set of the OA, one of the greatest days of my life. And Liz Carr was there on set and she's an absolutely wonderful actress. And we bonded and, you know, I became quite friendly with her. And this show has a really good record of casting disabled actors like Liz Carr in it. And they've got a disabled actor in it at the moment, Fran Mills, who's one of the core four cast members who have all moved to Birmingham to be with their leading figure, Nikki, played by Amelia Fox. Now, the other thing, when I watched it, I was pleasantly surprised by how daring. It starts off with kind of like a scene of intimacy, like a sex scene. You're like, how, and then there's a chase in the forest, and then this.
It's quite confusing.
It's quite confusing, yeah. The narrative is quite. Is kind of deliberately kind of mosaic-like, and then you meet this character who seems to be a killer, who seems to revel in the fact that he's a killer, and he's absolutely fine with it and showing off about it. And it's all quite kind of. I'm trying to avoid using the B word bold because I say that about everything, but it's bolder than I thought it would be for a show that's been going for 29 fucking years. Mm. And I rather enjoyed it. And it's and technically, in terms of. Listeners, the expression on Steph's face is literally, what the fuck are you talking about? You're a madman.
No, not
I just thought the whole thing, technically, and in terms of like, you know, the way it's shot and the way it's acted and everything, is of a level that was good. So I enjoyed it. And I'm not necessarily going to go back and watch the previous 28 series, but I enjoyed it. And I think it is an example of British TV having a level of quality now, which is a base level of quality, which is pretty damn good.
But it's not trash, crucially.
No, yeah, exactly.
It really isn't. Because it's structured in couplets as well, which again gives it a slightly almost literary feel to me. It's basically British CSI, except it predates CSI.
Yeah. Yeah. And
when this started, it caused quite the controversy for being very dark, and it's got in trouble a few times with, you know, the various, is it Ofcom and the censors for depicting horrible, horrible, vicious, violent scenes.
Yeah. And it's really graphic. The post-mortems are really graphic. And absolutely.
They do not mess about. No. But Steph, you are the criminologist here.
Oh,
I'm sensing you don't love it.
I feel like I'm being on a real Debbie Downer. Okay, I think maybe a bit of what you were saying is because I think people can watch this show while they're eating their tea, okay?
It's horrible.
I'd be a bit off-putting while they slice through the...
This, to me, I found the dialogue really stunted and unsophisticated. I found the constant camera shuttering of Amelia Fox really off-putting in it. She's just constantly taking... I know that's her job, but I find it really intrusive. She's just walking around slowly everywhere and you have to hear the constant camera shuttering.
It's a very specific...
I know, but it's
that
annoying.
That is a very specific complaint.
Listen, corridor guy, okay?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
She's got you.
Okay.
Camera shuttering. This is the new corridor. Corridor walking.
There were interview scenes with the police detectives that were truly so unrealistic. There's one scene where the guy who is the person who's an unashamed killer says, "And who are you?" to this other guy. That it's preposterous that would ever happen. I think when we're so used to seeing such intricate realism, like in Adolescence, something like that, and obviously this is not.
That's unfair to plug.
No. But this is not, obviously, this is not purporting to be Adolescence. But what I'm saying is we're used to seeing ultra realistic scenes where in criminal investigations. And this is so far removed from that. I found that really unenjoyable.
You didn't have a problem with the insane scenes in Prison Hurts, like where one character questions another with no lawyer or even...
And I openly admit that there's something about the American accent that means that doesn't seem to matter, and that's probably wrong. But this, I think there's a line in this, and this is not a spoiler. There's a line in this where someone goes to someone, "People think you killed your wife and you should spend the rest of your life behind bars." And the guy goes, "What are you saying?" It doesn't feel the sophistication that I think something that stars Amelia Fox should have in it. There's a discovery There's a discovery of a body, and you are supposed to suspend your disbelief that this body that's been found is laying undiscovered in a relatively shallow grave, and there was no cadaver dogs, and there was nothing. It's just, it's hyper unrealistic for something that is so realistic.
All your complaints are very specific.
Yeah,
about
very specific.
Yes, because when I'm looking at something which is silent witnesses and it's about crime, I'm looking at it with that hypervigilance of this wouldn't happen. No, I don't. Because
I just feel that the hypervigilance is only for this show, whereas fucking Islands can get away with anything.
I'm not saying I'm perfect, Lloyd, okay? I'm just saying this is why I didn't like it.
I'm going to draw a line under it now, if only because we have run out of time for this particular episode. I'm going to say, if any of you watch Silent Witness and you would like to offer your thoughts as to why this has been such an enduring classic, or at least a sort of long-standing fixture of British television, send it in, pilottv@empiremagazine.com, and we'll have a look at it and examine the evidence. Ooh. And come to a verdict.
Yes.
That is it for this week's Pilot Podcast. What else is out this week, Boydie? Well, absolutely nothing. Right, let's move on.
We should say the Silent Witness is on Monday and Tuesday, second and third. Monday and Tuesday for 5 weeks, different two-part story.
Silent Witness has been on TV for the last 30 years. Yeah. You don't need us to tell you where
it's back this week, though. The Muppet Show. You know, there's a one-off Muppet Show special on Disney Plus on Wednesday.
Miss Piggy Kermit.
Sabrina Carpenter one.
Sabrina Carpenter, yeah, that one. There is The Nevers is on ITVX now, all of it, which is, you know, that show from that guy.
Yes, that one.
Trying is on BBC One, which was previously on Apple TV, on season two starting on Tuesday at 10:40 p.m. There's a show called Copper on You, the You streaming thing from Tom Fontana, creative Homicide Life on the Street and Monsters Ball, and that's on You. That starts on Wednesday. It's available from Wednesday. FBI is back on Sky Witness and Now on Thursday the 5th. The Lincoln Lawyer is on Netflix from the 5th of February, also one of those reliable Netflix shows. And on next Sunday, Lord of the Flies, BBC One, 9 o'clock, and Betrayal, ITV One, 9 o'clock. That we'll hopefully review one or other or both of those.
And crucially, almost none of those things are on the calendar. Sorry, Steph, go on.
I would just like to mention that also what's gaining a lot of traction with the people on the ground is Finding Her Edge, which is the ice skating drama that you mentioned last week.
Oh, yeah.
Netflix.
On Netflix.
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about that.
Right.
I like that you're embracing this role as the vox populi on this podcast.
Yeah, I am, because I care about the people.
Yeah, good. Well done. Well done, you. That's it for this week's Pilot TV Podcast. Please do follow us on the social medias at Boyd Hilton, at James C. Dyer, at Pilot TV Pod, and at Steph Seelan.
That's my name.
That is your name. And please give us a, you know, a nice review, like a kind review, possibly with cake. That'd be nice.
Be nice.
Yeah, be nice. Be nice. Be nice to us. And please subscribe to Pilot Plus, because we want your money. I mean, look, I think it's best to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
We want your money to keep us employed.
Your effing money.
Yes, give us your effing money. That's what Boyd says.
And James will promise not to say vaginismus.
First of all, it's vaginismus.
And that's the one.
You go away and do your research, and then we'll talk about it next week. We won't. We absolutely won't. On next week's show, I mean, who knows? But The Artful Dodger is back on Disney Plus. Cross, Alex Cross, bit of crime. Seth, that's back on Prime Video. What else have we got? How to Get to Heaven from Belfast drives on Netflix, but that is embargoed. It's probably on Pilot Plus, maybe.
Small Profits on BBC Two, which is Mackenzie Crook's new show.
Yeah. Also not on the calendar. But, you know, it's all good.
Am I supposed to be putting stuff on a calendar?
Yeah, that's right.
No, it's having a go at me.
You should. You should all be putting stuff on the calendar.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, that's it. We're done. Thank you very much indeed. And I hope that you've enjoyed this podcast about checks, notes, television. Pilot out.